Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to Seth's Basement. It's Seth hanging out with you tonight in the basement alongside my producer, Katara. And tonight, we're going to break you a little Q&A. We're bringing you my exclusive take on the senseless murder of George Floyd, as well as the aftermath and how this might or might not affect the November elections that are in 156 days. Yeah, we have a very intriguing show. Let's go ahead. Let's get this firecracker lit and motherfucker fired up. And again, as I've said in the preview, 14 and under, this is not acceptable unless you're willing to explain the George Floyd situation to your kids. But first up, a little Q&A. First up, Seth. This will likely get me blocked off your Twitter, but here we go. Why are you so defensive about Godfather Part 3? You do realize it's not as great as Godfather's 1 and 2. So why are you putting yourself through that? All right, dude. Look, it's all good. No one is denying that Godfather 3 is nowhere near as great Parts 1 and 2. But there are some good things going for Godfather 3. First up, Sonny Corleone's illegitimate son, Vincent, has a lot of the family characteristics. Yeah, you're not paying attention to that part, right? And you also have the subplot of Michael's kids kind of branching off to their other lives, you know, away from the criminal life of the Corleone family. Another good thing is Michael Kay, you know, trying to reconcile, and this is well after the events of Godfather 2. You know, Godfather 2, it was, their marriage fell apart, literally disintegrated. And you're trying to be better co-parents, you know. We have the term co-parenting today that people use. Well, just look at Michael trying, okay? They're trying to be better co-parents in the ending. Oh, man, it is so Shakespearean-like. With the tragedy and the pain and the drama. It's just to really get the book end, the end of the saga. I mean, Francis Ford Coppola didn't even think of making this until financially he had no choice but to go ahead and make it. So, above all, we know the following. One, Sofia Coppola, horrible job in acting in this film, okay? That, we all mostly agree. And she's a much better director than she does acting in this film. All things aside, though, it's a good closing epilogue. And I don't block people unless it's someone really far off and it gets really downright personal. So most people are safe. Seth, question two, Seth. So what are your inspirations for doing these shows? You seem to enjoy doing them. Whether it's producing, co-hosting, being Hertz anchor, great question. I'm kind of like Howard Stern in a way. You know, as I tell people all the time, Katara is my version of Robin Quivers, and our friendship off the air is a lot like Howard and Robin. If you take Paul from Charlotte, Nakia Miller, and someone who's not a part of the network, but Jeff Canarsie, they're like my Fred Norrises, if you will. Everyone's got little pieces to the pie of where they fit in, but I love everybody that I work with. And Eric, for the most part, I can say does as well. Secondly, is Chuck D of Public Enemy. He had a show on Air America, and on that show, he would tell people things that would make you definitely, some people, very uncomfortable, big time. And lastly, there's a morning show duo that we had here for 10 years in Richmond, Jeff and Jeff, Jeff Beck, Jeff McKee. They had a great sense of humor, great mix of humor, music, and also somber tones where needed. So it was all good. It was all really well done. So, you know, those are my inspirations. Question three, Seth. So how do you feel about the case against Rachel Maddow, the slander case? That was brought on by One American News Network being tossed out and dismissed. Well, okay. Here's where people can go, oh, no, he's defending Rachel. Well, I am. Because, you see, she admitted something in that trial that really set the wheels in motion for the case being dismissed. She's an opinion entertainer slash journalist who offered her opinion off an article from the Daily Beast. Okay, now the proper course for One America News Network would be to sue the writer from the Daily Beast for coming out that piece, accuse them of having ties to the Kremlin, not sue Rachel Maddow. Rachel was offering her opinion, as she always does. And to her defense a step further, cable news is basically opinion-based entertainment slash journalism. It is. But there is a difference between this and the Covington High School kids. I'll explain to that in the next question. But know well that cable news, whether it's Bloomberg, Fox Business, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, you're basically hearing what we have here for you, opinions and facts, you know, based on facts. So here we go. Question 4. Seth, how come CNN had to pay an undisclosed amount of money to Nicholas Sandman? He was mocking Nathan Phillips and wearing a MAGA hat. Guilty, right? Right? Well, you know, you didn't see the full tape, so I actually know. What blew this case wide open and how Sandman was able to sue the media, CNN, The Washington Post, etc., is that the uncut video came out of the entire situation, and it showed a totally different scenario than what was portrayed in the media. It turns out there was an incident at the end of a Right to Life rally in D.C., that didn't help that Sandman and others from Covington were wearing pro-MAGA hats, okay? And that's just the nature of the beast. But what happened was Nathan Phillips, he's Native American, he came in to defuse the situation, and that clip was shown to everyone, was Mr. Phillips performing a Native American drum chant, and Sandman, Nicholas Sandman, smirking or smiling. When the uncut video came out, you saw the problems at the end of the rally that led to Nathan Phillips coming in to defuse the situation. And that's how you got all these defamation lawsuits that came out. And honestly, a lot of these things, to say the least, from the Covington kids, these lawsuits, these will be settled out of court. You won't know the dollar amount, but they're going to be settled out of court like this one was. Next question, and I can hear Katara laughing for this one. How dare I say that primetime on cable news is based on opinions? It's supposed to be that. Look, it is news programming, but it's all opinions, dude. It's a different ball of wax here. But when you watch the cable news networks, especially in primetime, it's opinion-based journalism. Group of commentators and hosts, all of them solid, airing their opinions of the news of the day. When I come out and talk to Katara or Nikia or anyone else here at the network and discuss the news here, again, based on the facts, I give you the facts and deliver my candid opinions. All I do is offer a different context than you get with the networks or even on talk radio. And as Katara could tell you right now, I pull the plug and take pride in my work, but so does everyone here at the network, as well as our counterparts in media that I tend to bash a lot. Hey, Katara, you're going to like this next question. You're going to love it.
Yeah.
Someone asked my opinion on mainstream corporate radio and whether I could see myself on a format of corporate-owned media.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, I really got it in fast. I mean, whoa. Hey, okay, here we go, folks. Look, I've had this attitude for 2.5 decades now. Corporate radio sucks. It does. Okay, get this, y'all. It doesn't matter what the music format is, whether it's top 40, hot adult contemporary, that's like your VH1 type music, urban contemporary, alt rock, adult urban, classic rock, classic hits, you know, talk. When you're in a music-based station that is not, that's corporate, it's stuck in a loop of about 300 to 500 songs in a playlist. Okay, and a bulk of the stuff that's played over and over again is on heavy rotation. That's the really popular stuff, and you rarely get deep cuts. Okay, now here in Richmond, we have an adult hits outlet, you know, and those you can identify with like Jack, Bob, Steve, Alice, Lucy, etc., that plays music from the 70s through today. Now, some of those stations are via automation, like ours here in Richmond. And even then, it's a generalized playlist. Now, Jack FM out of LA, I like that station. It's primarily classic rock, classic alternative, and current modern rock, because it's a callback to KROQ back in its heyday, and also what KCBS was before they went to Jack Classic Rock. Now, I understand the need for automation, voice tracking, and syndication these days. It's cheaper than having the local talent. But the days of my youth where you had primary local and live hosts, say for American Top 40, you know, your countdown shows, and the growth of talk radio aside, you know, back in my day, everything was mainly local and live. And nothing beats that. Solid music variety and hosts that are local to the area, not piped in via syndication or voice tracking. You know, I'm just saying. And here's the one that had Nakia, shout out to our Nakia Miller for this one, she was laughing right through this over the phone. Sith, so we're a year and a half removed from Halloween 2018. Have your feelings changed at all? If so, is there a possible tease into your updated countdown in October after you see Halloween Kills? All right, first and foremost, I was very frustrated when I walked out of the theater. I was saying Halloween 2018. Walked out, I was like, oh my God, so many missed opportunities here. But look, there's some things I like though, okay? The portrayal of Michael Myers in The Mask. Both, best of both, since Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. The one that was 6-1, that was before H2O, where you had the cult and you had Paul Rudd making all these weird faces. But anyway, the cinematography was great, so was the atmosphere, acting, and soundtrack. And all of those were the best since the original Halloween 2 and Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And also, throwing out all the plots from the first incarnation of Halloween 2 was good and forward. So I didn't mind the retcon in that point. Not at all. However, the ending. Jeff Canarsie, shout out to him. He knows how I feel about the ending. I'm not going to spoil it for you, for those of you haven't seen it, but it would have been a wise idea to take the franchise into a different direction, and that's all I'm going to say. The writing was, same thing with directing, and the humor was really poorly timed. And still having Laurie Strode still hung up on this 40 years later. You know, it's gotten a little bit better on me, but it still is up with Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers as a solid entry, but I'm still frustrated when I sit through it. And as I said a few weeks ago, the top two will remain the same. Halloween 1978, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Bottom two, which were Halloween 5 and Resurrection, those could flip back and forth possibly, but assuming that I like Halloween Kills even slightly, the rest of it's going to be total chaos come October. It's going to be fun. Next question. Seth, do you think that Democrats' fear of V recovery, as was stated by a former Obama advisor quoted in Politico, why or why not? Actually, he's right about this. Now, what's the V recovery? What does this mean? Well, V recovery means that when businesses reopen, they're going to automatically rehire the people that they furloughed and people that they let go and bringing them before bringing in new hires. Now, buckle up because I have a prediction here. Friday morning, the main job support drops at 8:30. On the True Talk Facebook page, I will be posting that report. Katara, can you give them our Facebook page real quick?
TrueTalk?
Yeah, just go to TrueTalk, and that would be the TrueTalk, and that's where you can go to see that.
Yeah, I'll be posting that around 8:45 when the article hits. I'm going to post it Friday morning, so it'll be about between 8:30 and 9. So go to Facebook, as it's hard to say, facebook.com/TrueTalk. It'll be there. Now, I'm suggesting that unemployment could hit 16 to 20% when that report drops. And I think the crater peak will be in the June report that's going to come up July 3rd, right before the 4th of July, okay? But as states reopen, they work on reopening, people start getting back to work, that rate will start dropping. Now, I'm not saying that all Democrats feel like this, but some of them wanted the economy to totally stay on lockdown and shut down until after the November elections. As before COVID-19, the unemployment rate was off the charts, and it was unfavorable for the Democrat presumptive nominee Joe Biden, 3.6%, and record unemployment lows in key demographics for Democrats. It was really looking bad. And the last thing that some people are going to want to see is a lot of people going back to work, which I'm going to address later on because, as Katara could tell you, I love watching people succeed. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Sis, do you fear any backlash from VP Biden's appearance on The Breakfast Club? Look, I talked to Paul from Charlotte about this. We talked on the phone about this. And look, I listened to the entire interview, and for the most part, it was a solid interview. But as myself, Big Hurt, Paul from Charlotte, and other people that we know inside and outside of the network could tell you, you don't go on The Breakfast Club if you're a presidential candidate and not expect certain curves not to be thrown at you, because they will do it. And they'll do the same for Trump if he somehow shows up, which I doubt. Now, it was a solid interview, except for that 5 minutes. Okay? And here's the catch. I could appear on, say, Opie Radio. 40-minute interview. 33 minutes, it's solid. But then I'll go off the rails. The media would focus on the 7 minutes that I went off the rails. And at the very end, go, well, for the first 33 minutes, Seth was actually very informative, but we wanted to focus on the 7 minutes we went totally sideways. That's what the media is doing here. Except for that 5 minutes, Biden was on point. He was on point. And note to Trump supporters, your guys treated the same way, so I don't want to hear that it wasn't fair, because Trump and Biden were treated the same way. The media puts down on the bottom of a piece what Trump got right, but for the most of it, they know that drama sells, and it does. That's what they did with Biden, too. Drama sells more, as well as controversy, than good stuff. I'm just saying. Now, did it affect anything? Not really. At the end of the day, 30% of people are unaffected by his appearance. They're going to vote for Biden no matter what. 30% were unaffected because they're voting for Trump no matter what. The main worry, the pragmatic 40%. Now, some might be second-guessing it after for a little bit. Some might blow it off as just Joe Biden telling an off-color joke, and it's Joe being Joe. And others will pull up what Trump has said. So in the end, it's all about perspective. But I don't think the backlash is as big as a lot of people have blown it out to be. You know, that's just my opinion. Last question before we get to where I said 14 and up. Seth, in your days of PvP with Jeff Canarsie, who was the person you couldn't stand the most out of the competition? Just pain your ass. Dude, that's easy. Mark Madden. All right. He's the afternoon drive guy on 105.90X out of Pittsburgh. All right. Now, I get his act, totally. Being on the air jackass and just keep it going, but the cat just doesn't know when to stop it. Okay? When you don't call him a sports genius, and agree with every point that he makes, he degrades you for his amusement as well as the minions who think he's God's gift to sports talk. He's also been responsible for running player athletes out of Pittsburgh that he doesn't like through his, quote, unnamed sources. He's also tried to be a shot host, kind of like Howard Stern. He said that an unemployed adult dancer was the hottest free agent in Pittsburgh. Just an absolute piece of trash. I don't care for him, don't like him, and I'm glad I don't have to listen to him. Now we're getting into the serious part here. As I said, 14 and up. If you have children that are listening, now would be a good time to send them on. Because it's time for me to go on my soapbox, as Chant would say. Get your shit off, Seth. Tell them how you feel. Now listen up, peeps. What happened to George Floyd, in my view, was an act of first-degree murder, period, in my view. Now, I know that the prosecutors are saying, well, we're right now all we can look at is third-degree murder and manslaughter doesn't even start to carry the weight of first-degree murder, or even second-degree. Okay? Now, as Paul from Charlotte and I both agree, this cop could probably get off, possibly. And that's scary. So it's time that we take a look deep down and ask ourselves, why does this keep happening? And how does it end without the restriction of civil liberties? And for the All Lives Matter crowd that are listening right now, and I know y'all are going to be listening to the replay, to some people, all lives do not matter. That's why we have to say Black Lives Matter. We're not excluding whites. We're not excluding anyone else. We're saying to some, Black lives don't matter, and they should. Hence, Black Lives Matter. Even some pro wrestlers who were raised in the most racist of homes agree that we have to say that those specific lives do matter along with all of our lives. Okay? Got it? Good. Let's move on. Here's what usually happens. One, there's an act of senseless violence or something against civil liberties at the hands of law enforcement and or government officials. Second stage, you get mainly peaceful demonstrations asking for answers and demanding accountability. Okay? In the midst of said demonstrations, a slight number of people from out of town come in and they take to the streets. They seek out to destroy property, break into businesses, set fire to police cars, buses, whatever, thus tampering with the credibility of the people that are exercising their First Amendment rights to freedom of speech, addressing the government and grievances, and peaceful assembly. After a few days of destruction, series of arrests are made, finally, by the local police department. And don't forget the feds also get their moment to say, hey, we're going to do an investigation here. Now, the media is a problem here, because in an attempt to divide the people even more, they try to spin the incident to tell people who you can trust and who you can't trust, thus putting the divide even more into the people, more than it already was before the incident happened. And depending on evidence, you either get a trial that ends up with a hung jury or innocent. Rarely do officers get charged or convicted with a murder rap. So who's behind all the looting and all the destruction that we're seeing right now? The protests start off as peaceful. Now, let's be fair about this here. 99% of these people are peaceful in these protests. More importantly, they're locally based. I'd say that again for the people in the back, as Katara would say right now. Locally based protesters are mainly peaceful. So let's take a look at why some of the outsiders are brought in, because some are put into place to cause destruction, mayhem, and to see how far can the government be pushed. You see, these people are paid to come into an area, cause destruction, and if caught and arrested, they get bonded out after about 24 hours or so and pay for their actions. And they go into these cities and these areas where local governments aren't going to prosecute them. So why are they doing all of this? Because they have backers, money-wise, that want to sow discord, pain, misery, government overreach, panic, etc., into our daily lives. Now, the late Malcolm X had a very salient point that needs to be heard by all. He compared white liberals as wolves, as well as white conservatives, and how they were disguising their ideas of trying to help the African-American community in a disingenuous way. Well, I have a question. Who's running most of these cities where all these riots are taking place right now? It's either white liberals or people that are liberal that have connection to white liberals, either being white Republicans or being a minority. And how do these white liberals treat minorities, for the most part, like outsiders or people who aren't one of them? You know, they say the right stuff to your face behind your back. Totally different story. You know, white liberals, as well as some right Republicans, have always tried to con or segregate the African-American community. They can try to come out, oh, we're like Eisenhower-type Republicans, but deep down they're trying to break down the African-American community and keep African-Americans boxed in. They get pissed off when African-Americans succeed. When the case of in 2007-08, then Illinois U.S. Senator Barack Obama running for president, the white liberals were pissed, okay? Because in their eyes, it was a white woman's place in line. And Van Jones called Hillary Clinton out on CNN earlier this week on her racist attitude and said that you shouldn't fear, you know, white nationalists. You should fear people like Hillary Clinton who have their racism helped out by Aryan-type beliefs. And guess what? Joe Biden, Donald Trump, they're no different than Hillary Clinton. Yeah, I said it. Okay? Because you got to remember, before 2012, Trump was a white liberal. Maybe not as hard left as some white liberals, but he was a white liberal. Okay? Just saying. And what white liberals try to tell African Americans is to ignore what's going on over here, Democrat, and everything will be okay. And Trump, as well as other Republicans, deep down have those white liberal values of racism. It goes both ways. There's no curtailing it. Yeah, I said it. So let's look at George Soros. Now, why do you really think that he's trying to help get people in office that will help change the current state of things? No. You're blind as a bat if you think that. He's been trying to unravel things here stateside, and in the meanwhile, make sure that cities burn to reinstall fear in minority communities so his agenda can get passed. He's helping fund things behind the scenes indirectly because he knows, well, the destruction of the Constitution is what he wants more than anything, because he wants our country to be like the European Union. He has allies in our government, in states and cities as well. It's all under the guise of trying to convince you all that European socialism is the solution to all our problems. But here's the catch here. Hitler was a socialist. Yeah, Adolf Hitler. Let me go a little bit more current. The Castro brothers in Cuba, socialists, both of them. Oh, and Soros has connections to some Republicans as well. You don't hear about that, though. Republicans don't want you hearing that part. Nah. Okay, so you get a bunch of outsiders that are bussed in, paid in advance to cause disruption so there can be violence in the streets, and anti-police such a crackdown. Okay, it's also to see how far the government will crack down on peaceful protesters as well, mainly white liberal socialists who want to seek out power for their superiors and try literally to destroy the country window from the ground up. Do not fall for the idea, the trap, that violence is the solution. We have the right to speak out about injustice, and rightfully so. It's in the First Amendment. Okay, but violence is not the solution. It just tempts government to shut things down further. That means more of your civil liberties will be at risk, no matter who you are, who you align with politically, etc. They're funded by groups linked to Antifa, who were widely praised in the media until they attacked CNN headquarters the other night. They bring in people ready to stir violence, attack police, which sadly, like with law enforcement that I'm about to say pretty soon, it takes one bad apple to make the appearance that everyone's bad. Now, this doesn't end well with rioting at all. And honestly, the people pulling the puppet strings to incite the violence, they want a full-fledged race war. They don't want you knowing that white liberals have been working with some white Republicans to symptomatically try to break and destroy the African-American community for decades. They don't want you knowing that white liberals have used African-Americans to get into politics to push policies that break the back of the African-American community. They don't want you to know that their handlers want African-Americans and minorities to kill each other, destroy each other's businesses and homes. How in the holy fuck do you think the gangs are still relevant in minority communities? It's not a hard thing to figure out. Because white liberals, along with some Nixonian-type Republicans, want to keep minorities trapped in a bubble. Let me tell y'all something. Nixon did way more than Watergate. He shut down the Black Panthers. And when he shut down the Black Panthers, it allowed the gangs to really start up. You can't change my mind on that because it's the God-honest truth. So I'm going to the mayors who are dealing with these riots. Most of these cities are ran by mayors that had stay-at-home orders because of COVID-19, and they had no problem with having people arrested for violating stay-at-home orders during COVID-19. Okay, you have a few bad apples that are making your civilized protesters look bad. Why aren't you arresting the bad apples? Clearly you could do that, right? Right? See, folks, this is just like what happened in Charlottesville with the Unite the Right rally that turned violent and deadly. Local police were told to stand down by city government, and it allowed the escalation of tension to turn violent and deadly. Now we've got shop owners that are boarding up their businesses because they're scared of losing their livelihood and businesses that they've built up because some mayors aren't letting the police do their jobs. How ironic. And it's kind of funny that some of these mayors and governors want Trump. It's as though they want martial law to be declared so the left and the right can have a field day calling Trump a tyrant. Okay, they want him to shut down the country over COVID-19. And we know that those who are perpetrating the violence in these protests are feeling this way. Now, yes, it would be easier if the 1% of police that exceed their authority didn't do it. But what has happened here is something that has happened in the past as well. If you get a police department alongside with city, county, state, federal government officials, they want to use excessive force over and over again. All racial profiling as well to boot in the police departments where it comes to apprehending suspects. When the powder keg explodes, it's too late. Don't get it twisted. This is not an isolated incident with the Minneapolis Police Department, nor is it isolated with other police departments as well. It's just that years after being allowed with authority to run amok without proper oversight, this is the end result, and it allows people from outside the metro area to come in and cause destruction. Again, we know that it's not all members of law enforcement that are using excessive force, but it only takes 1% to make the whole profession go to shit. This is how things have exploded nationwide here after the murder of George Floyd, and the white liberal socialists are leading the way. Wow. So why won't Trump step in on a federal level and declare martial law? Well, honestly, he's smart enough to know that he'll listen to his advisors who will tell you something like federalism. You can't do that without a civil war against the federal government. Federalism, what does that mean? The president is in charge of the scope of the federal government. State governments are in charge of what happens in their state as far as government goes. Localities, local governments, kind of like a chain of command, if you will. Okay? Some of these riots are trying to test Trump again to see if he'll do it. Same thing happened in the first 6 months of 2017 after Trump got inaugurated. You see, they want to call Trump a dictator, so the violence and the riot is their idea. See, their theory happened with Trump declaring martial law. Some people wanted that with COVID-19 as their governors and mayors, and now they want it again. But here's a nice wake-up. It won't fucking happen. Now, Trump did activate the National Guard so the governors can put them in the cities, but he can't order the military to overthrow state and city governments. And it's pissing off people in power that hate him that he won't do this because he knows it's a trap and he won't fall into it. The minute he goes into full tyrant mode and overthrows state and local governments, we know we turn into Cuba, China, North Korea, Russia, Germany in the days of Hitler, etc. And what's even worse about this situation, about wanting martial law, you have some people in Trump's own MAGA movement calling for it. Yo, stop already. Stop calling for martial law. It is not going to happen. Note to mayors and governors. Stop. I don't like Trump's rhetoric. Never have. But ignore the rhetoric and do your jobs. You know, there's only so much Trump can do at the federal level. But in the state and local level, you guys can do more with what Trump is able to do. Send you money the whole nine yards. It's kind of ironic that a lot of them waited for buildings to burn before asking for the National Guard to be activated. His rhetoric sucks, but the lack of action allowing the cities to burn is indefensible. And the fact that they're passing the buck and whining over Trump's Twitter account gives off the idea that they are complicit with the burning and destruction of businesses and properties. Letting Antifa protesters go away with a small fine on trying for actual crimes, get out of here. You have African Americans that are tried for way worse. My God, you have some African Americans that are tried for simple possession of marijuana, and they get more time than these people. Go figure. And by the way, the DOJ is looking into classifying Antifa as a domestic terrorist group. So the scope of surveillance on Antifa is going to be huge, and the netcast will be deeper than what was put into Trump's 2016 campaign. That's huge. Now, they're leaving behind a path of destruction, and people are worried about Trump tweeting. We don't need to see the tweets right now, and we don't need to see the hyperventilating over the tweets either. We need to see the mayors and the governors go, okay, we need funding to help rebuild. Because people need to get back to their daily lives. I don't like the rhetoric on any side, but I have the common sense to know that passing the buck doesn't work. Law enforcement has spent decades overreaching their authority, and it's just a small portion. And it's still not being addressed on a local or state level in most cases until something like this happens. The only thing this is helping is with the 30% that hates Trump. That's it. Let's move on to the peaceful protests. And these are about several amendments to the Constitution. Document the politicians state they're defending, but it's more so they're using it as toilet paper. Freedom of speech. Freedom of religion. The right to bear arms. The right to due process. The right not to have unreasonable searches and seizures. The right to peaceful assembly. The right to address government of grievances, etc. Minorities, and especially African Americans, are stuck in a rut where some, if not all, of those rights have been stripped by 1% of law enforcement. Yeah, that's right. As I've said, it only takes 1% of law enforcement to give the entire profession a bad look. And it doesn't help that the corporate media is out there helping drive this into the minds of African Americans, as well as minorities, that division is the right answer. It's gotten to the point where the media and white liberal socialists, as well as some white Republicans, want to take in this fight. They're scared of what happens when a cross-section of the country gets red-pilled, like what I'm doing to all of you tonight, giving you information you won't get anywhere else. Jesus, y'all, take the red pill. What we're seeing online, on our phones, on TV, this has been brewing for decades. It's a fight for who will control for the rights of common people and minorities. We the people, or the elected bureaucrats that look to strip minorities of their rights bit by bit. Oh, and if you're white like I am, don't rest easy because you won't be out of the woods either. This goes beyond wearing a face mask because you're out in public. This is about your basic constitutional rights that are being infringed, and a powder keg that will continue to explode until real change happens on all levels of government. It's time to stop begging politicians, Trump, Pelosi, Biden, McConnell, and others to save you. Stop relying on your governors and your local governments as well. They're not going to help you until it's too late, so they can push more panic and fear. They understand that the more fear they can push, the longer they can remain in office. It's a power play designated by the people, by people on the taxpayer's dime, and they don't give a damn about. It's all about greed, power, and stripping your basic freedoms away. As the late George Carlin said, it's all bullshit and it's bad for you. Oh, by the way, y'all, if you're triggered tonight, do not go to CP3 or Big Hurt if I've triggered you. I said in the promos for this show, this was not for the weak of heart. So if you're triggered by the red pills, you can take it like an adult or go on to your safe place and continue to be brainwashed. I have seen too many friends that I grew up with either end up dead or in prison. And a part of the reason is the symptomatic racial issues that that African Americans face. I want to wake up one day and see us all fight the real enemy as Malcolm X or Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would fight them with intelligence and love and bind, because those will always defeat hate and division in the long run and not join a bunch of paid people we seek out to destroy and segregate. I want to wake up and see the people I love and care about and not have to worry about them walking down the street without wondering if they left home for the last time. I want to wake up to everyone succeeding, because unlike the people that are linked to Soros, the other donors, and the people that are promoting all this looting and shit, I get a great delight of seeing minorities as well as everyone else succeed and not tear each other down. Get the point? Hug your children, your partner, your spouse, your loved ones, your family, your friends, etc. Tell them you love them. Tomorrow isn't promised. George Floyd's family is in agonizing pain right now. My heart weeps for them. The media is not honestly weeping. I can tell you that. And I weep for those who honestly need and want answers and aren't out to hurt their neighbors either. And the media is not with you or them on this, okay? They weep fakely because they don't care, and they would rather stir the pot and keep us all divided. And everyone should know that. Okay? But understand well, note to George Floyd's family, we here at True Radio Network are deeply sorry for what happened. All this over a counterfeit bill. You know where I live, you just get signs posted and you have marking, you know, the markers for a counterfeit bill. That's all they do. They don't go and take your life over it. Just flat out unreal. And that's the big memo. Okay. Now, this is going to affect November 3rd, 156 days away. Well, this will all snowball on November 3rd. And it depends on where the 40% are on Election Day. And I'm ignoring the polls, okay, because the polls, as I've told you all on True Talk and on here before, those primarily favor Democrats over independents and Republicans, okay? This time 4 years ago, NBC Marist poll had Trump up by 1 point over Hillary Clinton. And that didn't work out well. It also had Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Pennsylvania, all big time. Clinton was in the lead, huge. Now, with delegating the authority and not being an overbearing dictator, although his feud with Twitter still rolls on, this helps Trump with the 40% that are pragmatic. Yeah, as I keep telling y'all, 30% will never vote Trump. And they're either staunch Democrats or never Trump Republicans, which are few and far between. They're not as much as you think. 30% diehard MAGA, they'll vote for Trump no matter what. So Biden and Trump are fighting over to get 21% of the 40%. So they gain a clear majority over 50%. As I just said, delegating and not taking full federal control helps Trump with the 40%. Okay, the 30% that want him gone want him to impose martial law so they can tell the 40% he's an overbearing dictator. Right now, I still see it as close, but the more Trump doesn't over exceed his authority, it'll help him with re-election, even with high unemployment. You know, some of the 40% see the violence and destruction is determined to Democrat leadership, which is why Keith Ellison, who is the Minnesota State Attorney General, scrubbed his Twitter account recently of his praise of Antifa. He had to quickly remove it because, as he knows, the outside groups are causing Minneapolis to burn. Some see it as a detriment to Trump, to his leadership as well. So it's just perspective. I see this as a very close election right now. I do not see what what MAGA pundits are calling a huge Trump win in a landslide. The whole country's turning red now. I see this as probably 2004, where it was close between Bush and Kerry, but Bush pulls it out. So just sit tight because we're 156 days away from it. And whether it's here in the basement or on True Talk, I'll have it all covered for you. Katara, do you have a show next week?
No, not at this time.
Okay, so good news. We're going to start the countdowns back next week. We're going to have a little fun. Enough of the seriousness for a bit. The top 190 films you have to see before you die. We've already done the 80s. Now we're going to do the 90s. As Matthew McConaughey would say right now, all right, all right, all right. As for the rest of the shows here on the network, we have Sports on the Hill podcast, which is, they might do a show this week, all depending, but with sports shutdown, it's kind of nipped in the bud right now. But they cover DC sports without the politics. It's Monday nights, 7 to 9, with CP3, Robbie G, Paul from Charlotte, Anna Kay, and Dejanay Bland, and the rest of the gang there, and Robbie G. Tuesday nights, 8 p.m., True Talk with myself, Dan the Sith, Katara, our dear friend Nakia. We cover all the Beltway politics you need to know, and even local politics as well. Wednesday night is a new show, The Race of Relations, with Nakia Miller. I produce her show, actually. We had a great opening show that you can find in the archive, blogtalkradio.com/trueradio1. Great show debut episode for Nakia Thursday night. I'm a producer. That'll be Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. is the regular slot. Thursday nights at 8 p.m., it's Hurt's House with the Big Hurt. He's got all your D.C. sports with the politics. See what I did there, folks? Yeah. This Friday night, 10 p.m. after SmackDown, No Spots podcast with myself, Dan Seth, along with my tag team partners, D.C.'s People's Champ, and Donnie Wrestling from the Wrestling Ranch in West Virginia. This week, we have got a huge show for you because next Sunday is NXT, WWE NXT TakeOver In Your House. WWE is resurrecting that In Your House brand, pay-per-view branding that they had in the mid to late 90s, bringing that back for NXT. So we're going to preview that card and give you preliminary grades for that one. And then the following Friday, we're going to recap it and also give our predictions for the pay-per-view 2 weeks from tonight, WWE Backlash. And as I said, next Sunday, along with Q&A here in the basement, numbers 100 to 76 of the top 190 films you have to see before you die. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for Here in the Basement tonight. I am Seth, Dan the Sith. It's been a pleasure talking to you all this evening. Everyone, take care. We love you. God bless. We'll see you next week. And a very happy tomorrow to you. Good night, everyone. Take care, and we will see you next.